And hello again, everybody. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. The number is always to call on this Wednesday is 201-939-4513. For you on Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. I am Russ Salzberg, joined by my colleague and good buddy, Paulie Dotz, Paul Dottino. And away we go. And the way we go right now is trying to prepare with a battered and bruised Big Blue squad with the rough and tumble Kansas City Chiefs coming into town.
Yeah, this is not a team you want to be shorthanded against.
A very, very good football team, what I think might very well be the team to beat. You know, certainly
they're going to be a contender.
They're going to be right there. Yep, I happen to think they're a very good team, and it's a as you say. Also, what were you and I talking about yesterday? I think after a bye week, Andy Reid is 16-2
career
16-2. So
that's pretty good.
we're talking about a situation. Listen, folks, we've gone all over it over and over and over again. We know where we are, and where we are is 1-8, and that's what it is. So you can rehash and rehash and rehash. It's not going to change anything. 1-8 remains 1-8. You heard what your ownership said. The decisions will be made. Any and all decisions will be made at the conclusion of this season. You might not like it. It is certainly not the popular decision. But I said to you, we were talking about it. I said to the folks yesterday, I do believe while it's unpopular, I believe it's the right decision simply because nothing gets solved with a Band-Aid. As David Deal said yesterday, Band-Aids don't fix hemorrhaging. And at 1-8, you could say you're hemorrhaging. Certainly is the case. And to me, you can be angry and upset. And that's fine, but you can't make a decision because everybody is angry and upset. When you make that decision, more times than not, it's going to be the wrong decision. A lot of things need fixing, and we all know that, but now to do it, to just throw a Band-Aid up and say, well, let's do something just to appease fans and media, and I don't mean this as an insult to fans because you're the lifeblood of any team, but the bottom line is, an organization can't base their decisions, important decisions, on that, and you have to move forward.
No, the bottom line right now is opportunity for every guy on that roster to show that he belongs here or at least in the NFL. Because guys who don't, they're not going to be around for long. And quite frankly, remember, and everybody says this every time that they're struggling to get to the finish line of a losing season, it's about what you put on tape. Because you have to decide if you are going to be part of the solution or if you are part of the problem. And really, that's what it comes down to, Russ.
Yeah, and you know, it's not just, listen, we all talk about Big Blue pride and Giants pride. And certainly this is an organization rich in tradition, okay? Rich in pride. But it's not just about Giants and Big Blue pride. It's also about your own individual pride. It's pride in yourself and pride for the guys sitting, lining up next to you. So, if you don't want to be here, then you're going to want to be someplace else. And if you want to be someplace else, for lack of a better term, you better be playing your ass off from here on in to prove that you're either worthy of being here or someplace else.
Can I give you a good example of a guy who has tremendous pride, tremendous desire, and badly wants to be here, if not in the NFL? DJ Fluker.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He is a great example of a guy who is absolutely not going to quit for one play. He was badly banged up in that game the other day. In fact, he's been limping around with a sore knee for a few weeks now. And he gets landed on the other day in the game, and he can barely walk like Frankenstein to get to the sideline because he had to come out.
Right.
He gets out. They're wrapping him up. They're taping him up because he's screaming how he's got to get back in the game. He's got to get back in the game. Now, I understand. He's on a one-year contract. I don't care what the reason is. This is a guy who is going to leave it all on the field every single time. That's a guy I want to have on my team in this situation.
I think that's where a lot of the frustration is coming from all of us, including you and me. The frustration is, are there enough people leaving it all out on the field? That That's where a lot of the criticism comes from. And listen, when you have two losses, as the Giants had the past 2 weeks, that criticism is justified. No one is going to dispute that.
And you know the tough part about it, though, Russ? And I use him again as an example because he does get back in the game very shortly after they tape him up.
Right.
And he's given everything he's got. But there are going to be plays where, because of his gimpy legs, he's going to be overmatched.
Well,
and he's not going to perform well. And then people pile on and say, oh, you know, he can't play. He can't do this. Oh, he quit. What, are you kidding me? The guy didn't quit. The guy is hobbled. Give him credit for trying, for goodness sakes.
Paulie, I would not dispute that one bit. The however is this.
If you're on the field, you got to perform.
No, not just that. But when you're 1-8, the glass is always half empty. It's never half full. What is going to be the negative is the negative. Unless you're winning, nobody wants to hear anything else. And nobody cares. It's always like the next man up. You got to do it. Players say that themselves. We are not. This is not an excuse, and it is not an excuse for the way they performed Sunday in Frisco. It's not an excuse for the way they performed against the Rams. But this is a battered, beat up. This is not a frontline unit. You know. Well, let's be careful. There's a lot of starters in there, and you know, because I don't want to portray us as absolving the defense, none whatsoever.
No, that is not.
The
case.
Do
not do that.
You know, but. When all is bad, it's bad. And believe me, all is bad right now with your New York Giants.
How many times did Dan Reeves say in some of his losing stretches, no one's going to feel sorry for us?
No. That's it. No one is going to feel sorry. And 201-939-4513. That's 201-939-4513 is the number. On Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. Let's open up the lines. Go down to Atlanta. Speak with our buddy down there, Omari. Omari, how you doing today?
Hey, Russ. Hey, Paul.
Hello.
Hey.
How you doing? Hey, so I want to start by saying that, they don't show the Atlanta games or the Giants games down here.
Right.
It's only, like, Southern conferences. So all I could really watch was the sort of low lights from the Saturday game.
Oh, boy.
Sunday game.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
So just nothing but, like, Janoris getting beat and, you know, the Eli, like, trying to save the play, and he fumbled it. But what I want to talk about is actually last week, y'all had Sean O'Hara come on and sort of give, like, his thoughts on the season and, you know, just trying to find, like, upside where we can. And one of the things that stuck out from what he said was that he said that guys that get off of their blocks are the ones that haven't quit or something to that effect. And, you know, watching in that combined with there was a Brett Jones and DJ Fluker article on Big Blue View last week talking about how their improvements have, like, really helped the run game. And sort of after reading that article, I'm all in on Fluker with you, Paul. Like, you know, just, you know, he's a big man, and they had one breakdown where he was doubling up, I believe it was Aaron Donald or one of the Rams' D linemen. Mm-hmm. And then there was a linebacker that was about to crash down and, like, get on the run. And DJ Fluker, like, you know, he's not quick enough to, like, slide over and pick him up, but he made his best effort to get off of that block. And, like, you know, Dark was able to scamper up and salvage something out of that play. And, you know, having that in sort of the same mind as just going back to guys, like, getting off their blocks, it feels to me that the O-line is still, like, trying really hard to prove themselves and, like, make up ground from where they started this year. And, you know, as a fan, I really appreciate that.
Well, Omari, I'm glad you brought that up because we were discussing it yesterday. It's inevitable, like, all season long, and you know that because you've called before, all season long. That's been the mantra. Let's blame the offensive line. And, you know, David Deal brought it up yesterday. everybody still keeps talking about because he's been the poster boy for offensive line woes, Ereck Flowers. But Deal brought it up yesterday. You know, since game two, Ereck hasn't given up a zero sack. So it has been, improvement in that. And, listen, Amari also mentioned Brett Jones. Brett Jones is probably, I don't know if he's been the brightest surprise or brightest spot for the Giants this season, but he's certainly one of them. I mean, he's another guy who plays his butt off, Amari. So, listen, we concur. I couldn't agree with you more on that. Thanks, as always, for the call, my friend. All right?
Thanks for taking the call, guys.
Those two linemen are part of the solution.
Yeah. I would, Brett Jones has been terrific. I mean, he really has been terrific. You can't say anything but that. He has been excellent for the Giants. Andrew in Pennsylvania. Andrew, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing today?
Hi.
Good.
All right, good. Well, I wish I could be calling about some better things, but I was curious if you guys know, pretty much the worst record of the Giants of all time throughout the history.
Well, they've had some two-win seasons.
Yeah.
Okay, if you really, really, really want to talk about that, I don't know that this is the time to do it.
Yeah.
But they've had a bunch of two-win seasons. I remember when I was a kid. The Yale Bowl seasons were just absolutely dreadful. Look, here's what I will tell you. Regardless of what the record turns out to be, for me, this will be the biggest fall off from expectation that I can remember, because in those years, in the late 60s, mid 60s, late 60s, and then mid 70s, those teams were not expected to do anything. So when they won two games, it was like, okay, you know what? They are what they are. This team, by many counts, was going to be a playoff team, maybe even a Super Bowl team, and they are rock bottom. So for that reason, this disappointment for me in terms of where they were predicted to be and where they're going to wind up is going to be the biggest gap that I can ever remember in my 35 years covering the team.
Andrew,
first record by numbers is 1-12-1. Yeah, that's from 1966.
You're right, Andrew.
Before that, they only had two wins. It was they went 2-12 one year with Y.A. Tittle. And that was Y.A. Tittle's last year.
64.
So no, 60, no.
Some of them were even worse than the 70s. I'm just curious if this is going to go down as the worst team in Giants history.
Andrew, in 64, it was 2-10-2.
That was Tittle's last year.
And that was Tittle's last year. And that, remember, that was coming off of not one, not two, but three straight trips to the
games.
NFL championship game. Not one, but three straight trips. They in consecutive years, they were, let's see, in 61, they were 10-3-1, 62, 12-2, and 63, 11-3. Then it was 2-10-2, 7-7, 1-12-1. Let's put it this way, Andrew. If it's the worst or near the worst, what are we talking about? Misery, love, and company here?
Yeah, I know.
Who cares?
I'm not sure I get your point, to be honest with you.
There is no silver lining to this season. I don't care. I think it's even worse that Beckham's injured, because I think when he goes to argue for his contract, they're going to say that he wasn't on the field and see how much money he could make for the team. I don't see any silver linings in this season. I don't see any bright spots. I think the letter that the Maras and Tisch wrote out to the fans was a bunch of crap. I'm sorry. It was just an excuse to buy time.
Well,
sometimes.
Well,
hold
on. Andrew.
I mean,
Andrew,
so
slow down a second. Andrew, slow down a second. What would have been done to make the team better right now?
The team, well, no, it would have gave everybody a heads up in the locker room. It would have put everyone on notice. Every other team fires coaches, not every other team, but teams fire coaches during the year.
Andrew, are you just going to talk? Andrew, are you just going
to
talk? Goodbye.
Goodbye.
If you're just going to talk and not listen, it doesn't become a discussion.
You know why I have to chuckle a little bit?
I mean, really?
Football, Russ, because does he really believe that there's anybody in that locker room, specifically players, who don't think they're on notice after horrible season?
That's
the really
thing.
Not think that?
You know, that's the thing.
Really?
You want – I mean, if you want to have a sensible discussion, have a sensible discussion. If you want somebody slammed or fired just because it's going to make you feel better, believe me, that is the wrong thing for any organization to do. It makes no sense. Because all it is doing is satisfying you, so don't call me names. Don't you think ownership here and the organization knows that everybody was going to be upset and they're going to come at us and we got 7 games to go? Don't you think that? Do you know anything about, since everybody's talking about the history here, do you know anything about this organization, the Giants organization, and in particular the Mara family? Why do all players want to come and be part of this organization? I mean, really? I mean, this is not, and I've said it before, this is not the Big Blue Chamber of Commerce. But here's what the attitude is. You know what you guys want? A lot of people, this is what you want. And nobody is sticking up for 1-8, because 1-8, you cannot defend. They have stunk, okay? Plain and simple. Nobody is going to dispute that. But you know what? It becomes with a combination of fans and a combination of media. Here's what it becomes. It becomes like a mob mentality. It's like the old westerns that you used to see. Well, they're going to the jail, and we want to lynch who's inside. And you got the sheriff and his deputy standing outside with shotguns saying, you can't come in. I mean, really? You know, let's do something. It's a bunch of crap. You say it's a bunch of crap, Andrew. Okay, it's a bunch of crap. What's the solution? Really? Let's just fire somebody to make everybody happy? Nuh-uh. It doesn't work that way.
Andrew sounded much too young to truly understand the perspective of this organization, but if he were alive in 1983, he definitely would have wanted to fire Bill Parcells when he was 3-12-1.
Oh, yeah. I would have liked to have been a fly on the wall getting all calls and all Twitter and what when Bill Parcells, yeah, was 3-12-1.
You know, there was no BBKL then. There was no Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, there was no 24/7 nonstop talk TV, talk radio.
No, that's exactly – correct me if I'm wrong.
Went to the playoffs the next year with 9 wins actually won a playoff game, too, against the Rams.
I'm just drawing a complete blank. I'm drawing – the Hall of Fame coach with the – I'm drawing a complete blank with the Steelers.
Yes.
What's his name?
Chuck Noll.
I think Noll was a 1-15 or 1-13.
It was brutal.
1-15 or
1-13. Yeah, it was brutal. I don't remember the record, but it was brutal.
Hello?
Or he would have been 13. It was 14 games in those days.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, really? Kevin in Florida. Kevin, how you doing today?
Good, gentlemen. How you doing?
Hi.
You know, by the way, I was listening to the last conversation. I remember the 66 season like it was yesterday. and I remember at the end of the season, Marty Glickman on the radio saying, they may not be very good, but he said they showed up every week and they gave you what they had. And coming from him, I think that was a pretty good credit to that team. They weren't very good, but he said every week they showed up, gave you what they had, and it wasn't enough to win in the league, and they went on from there. But
I want to say that was Gary Wood at quarterback, yes or no?
Well, that was the year that Earl Morrill got
hurt. Earl Morrill. Okay, that's right. Okay.
And they brought him in 65, Morrill, and they had the nice 7-7 season, and then he got hurt.
Right.
And then, yeah, Kennedy played at the end of the season. And
Tom
Gary
Kennedy.
Wood and,
yeah.
And some others, others played, but, you know, Tucker Fredrickson is hurt. All the baby bulls were hurt. There were other injuries.
Yep.
Lockhart was terrific.
Wait a minute.
There were a few others.
Kevin, now you're jogging my memory. Isn't Kennedy – that's the one I told you about. Kennedy's the guy who came from the Continental Football League, the Brooklyn Dodgers.
He came from the Brooklyn minor league team.
Yeah, the Brooklyn Dodgers, right.
And Gary Wood was an old Ivy League player, as I remember.
And I'll tell you what, I thought he maybe had a shot to be a backup in the league at the time, but apparently that didn't work out, you know, but I do remember that, and I remember after that season, I go back to about 62 when I started following him. I live in Florida, and I grew up in New York. And there was really, at the end of that season, I remember Marty Glickman yesterday. He said it was a lot of fun. These guys played hard, but most of the time they played someone who was better than they were, something to that effect.
Well, you know, that, Kev, unfortunately, That seems to be the problem that there's been a lot of discussion about, and I'm sure you've heard the discussion. You know, playing hard is one thing. Not playing hard is something else, and that seems to be a question in particular the last 2 weeks. People can tolerate losing, but if you're not playing hard, and it certainly appears that way, that's a problem.
And here's what scares me a little bit. You know the Mara family is obviously one of the top groups in the, you know, ever in the league. If they go on that Thursday night Thanksgiving game and they are embarrassed by that sort of activity, with players not performing up to some minimal expectation or something like that happens, and the team, they can lose the game. They can lose 31-28 on another 60-yard field goal. But I think people need to leave watching that game thinking these guys showed up and played. And I think it would be a very unfortunate for Mr. Mara to have to watch that game on a holiday on national TV if things didn't, you know, play. If the impression the casual NFL fan walked away and said these guys have already, you know, sort of tapped out for the season. And I'm really hoping that doesn't happen.
Well,
even if they don't win the game. You know, and I'm sure with a guy like Eli Manning around, that's probably not going to happen. But you hear all this talk about some other guys that may or may not. Again, I'm like the other guy living in Florida. I don't get to see a lot of games anymore. I listen over the internet, and I'm convinced Carl Banks is the greatest analyst of football.
It's Kevin, right?
Yes.
Okay, Kevin.
Yes.
Let me just say one thing to you, and I appreciate the call because I think you're a heck of a fan, and thank you. I will say this. There is not one person out there, not one fan out there, who has even one fraction of disappointment, hurt, or disgust that John Mara feels when the Giants lose. This is his family. This is his family's business. This is their lifeblood. This is what they do. They breathe it every second of every day. Please don't ever, anybody out there, get the misconception that they don't hurt many times more than you do when this team falls apart and they lose. Okay? And I want to make that very, very clear. So what you just said, actually, I would disagree with it because I think John Mara feels that way every Sunday. It's not just about a Thanksgiving game. I think every single time he watches his team on the field, he wants to see them play hard and he wants to see them fight and do that logo proud. I don't think Thanksgiving has anything to do with it. So I would expand on your sentiment if that's okay with you.
Oh, that's fine, except I'm just saying to myself, here's a national TV game that was picked in the preseason to be on national TV because they thought this was going to be a premium matchup.
That's true.
And as a Giant fan, I want to be able to watch that game and say, you know, they may not have won the game. They may have lost.
I got
you. They showed up. They gave it a great effort. And, you know, I think at this point that's probably what Giant fans can hope for. And, heck, you know, if you're in a game, you never know what can happen in the fourth quarter.
Well,
you know, a lot can happen, and the Giants have been in games. They just haven't been able to close the deal.
Yeah, unfortunately, Kev, they haven't been in it at the end, certainly the last two games. And, Kev.
The Eagle game.
Yeah, no, and the two of them.
Look, the nationally televised game against the Broncos at this point is by far the high point of the season.
Absolutely.
There's no question about that. I hope you enjoyed seeing that game.
I did.
Good.
I did.
All right, Kev.
And, I'm hoping we have another one on national TV. All right, fellas, thanks for the time. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks very much. I'm glad you said it. I mean, nobody. You know, if you think as a fan, if you think that's a bunch of baloney or BS about John Mara, it pains him more than anybody else, then you don't know this organization and you don't know the Mara family.
He gets physically ill over it, Russ.
I'm telling you. But the easiest thing for him to do, the easiest thing to do is just, let's do something for the sake of doing it so the fans don't complain. That's the easiest thing to do. You know? It was the same thing with when Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo, well, let's say Ben McAdoo, but I'm sure it was in, concert with Jerry Reese, when they suspended Janoris Jenkins. And this was coming off after suspending DRC.
Right.
the easiest thing to have, what they could have done, the easiest thing was, all right, let's just slap him with a fine and move forward, sweep this under the rug or keep it quiet so we don't create anything. They knew it was the right thing to do, and they knew all the criticism. Here we go again. It's going to mean that nobody's getting along, and it means that the players are running roughshod. That was the easy thing to do if they would have done it that way. But they didn't do the easy way. And in fairness to the ownership, they didn't do the easy way. Let's just whack somebody. Let's make changes right now. For what? What's it going to do? Got to disagree. Lisa in Brooklyn, she's back. No stomping, Lisa. No stomping, huh? Lisa, are you there? Hello, Lisa.
Hello,
Lisa. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
All right.
Hi. We're going to still stomp. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
We're still going to stomp. We still want to win.
Go ahead.
Okay. I have a question for Paul. First thing I want to say about Mr. Mara, did the fans see him in the box that night walking back and forth?
Look,
again. He was so angry. If you want to question Mr. Mara, I mean, I believe he's going to right the ship. I have a lot of faith in him. You could see how disappointed and sad he was that night and angry. So I'm not worried about Mr. Mara. I know he's going to do what he has to do.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I have a question for Paul.
Go ahead.
Okay, offensive line. I like Brett Jones. I love Fluka. I hope they keep Fluka.
Yeah.
Eric Flowers is showing an improvement at left tackle, but do you think next year, now it's just a thought, that they're going to keep him there or they're going to look for another left tackle?
Well, I will add what I said last week when people asked me about, the draft coming up. And it's not a great draft for left tackles. It's also, at the moment, a very poor free agent pool for left tackles. Nate Solder is the only offensive tackle, really, at the moment, that's worth anything coming up due for unrestricted free agency. So there is a possibility. I really don't want to start another firestorm of calls here. But, folks, there is a possibility, okay? I'm not going to put a percentage on it, that Eric Flowers may be the best option at left tackle next year, too.
Hasn't given up the sack.
He hasn't given up a sack since week two against Ziggy Ansah, who really beat him up that night. Since then, not one sack been charged to Eric Flowers. The improvement has been there. I promised you it would be there. It has been there. Maybe a little late, maybe a little gradual, but it has been there. Of course, he still has a long ways to go to becoming Anthony Munoz.
No, it hasn't been perfect, far from it. But let's be honest, the improvement has been there. Nobody wants to hear it now because the team's 1-8.
Of course not. Of course not.
I mean, a lot of people claim that it's because of Eli's quick release
getting
the sacks.
It's part of it.
If you watch the games, I mean, Eli was doing the quick release in the beginning, too, when he was giving up the sacks, and people were complaining about his technique. So I do think he's improving.
All right, let me give you another stat that has nothing to do with sacks and quick releases. You're aware that last year, Eric Flowers was flagged 13 times for penalties, of which 12 were accepted. All right, and that was amongst the highest in the league. So far, he's been hit for 3.
Yeah.
And when you see a significant decrease in penalties by an offensive lineman, that is a direct correlation to his improvement. So for everybody out there who wants to talk about his sacks and say, okay, that's a bunch of bull, it really doesn't show anything, they're scheming, they're getting rid of the ball quick, they're doing this, they're doing that, it's not really showing any improvement on Flowers. Well, guess what? His penalty numbers are down significantly, and that is a direct correlation to his improvement in technique. Because when you have bad technique, you commit a ton of penalties.
Lisa, like we've said.
Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate you bringing that up.
He has improved, and as always, my dear, thank you for the call. Always a pleasure.
Have a great guy.
You
great
too.
Guys.
Always a pleasure listening to you. Again, but they're 1-8, and nobody, what are you telling me about improvement for? I don't want to hear about improvement. They're 1-8. That's what it is.
I mean, it's the middle of November, and I am warning people now, Eric Flowers may have to stay at left tackle. That may be the case, so get used to it. It may have to be.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Marvin in Delaware. What do you say, Marv? How you doing today?
All right. How you doing, Paul and
Hi.
Russ?
What's going on, buddy?
All right. I don't know if y'all remember me.
Sure. You're the coach. You're the coach. We know you.
Maybe I said Coach Marvin. That's your start.
There you go.
Great to have you call back.
Yeah, it seems like I get you guys most of the time.
Well, that's fine. We appreciate intelligent calls.
Thank you. What I was calling was it's tough at the being 1-8, but I'm sticking with the guys. I think this is a team that they got a chance to probably to reload. Everybody want to break them up. I think they still have some talented players on that team that with the draft pick, if they can get a high draft pick, that they can rebuild that team. And Paul was saying that there's no left tackles. Well, I was reading that they did have a few. The kid out of Notre Dame has been looked at pretty well at left tackle.
Yeah, the problem is I really believe that the early returns that I've heard is that he'll be moved into guard, and he'll be a better NFL guard than he will be a tackle. And that makes me, whenever I hear that, it kind of makes me hesitate a little bit, because that means you're kind of forcing the issue. You know what I mean?
I can agree with that. If you're talking a guy that's a tackle, I haven't heard that. If you're talking a guy moving from tackle to guard, then there are some question marks about doing that. And I can agree with that. But the other statement I wanted to make real quick is, you hear a lot of people talking about the organization of the Giants, and they're one of the original teams in the NFL. I've been a fan. Go back to 75 as far as Joe Prosacek days.
Oh, don't bring that up. Don't bring that up.
75 is actually Craig Morton.
Well, just a little note. He actually lives next door to, I work for the federal government. He lives right next door to one of my good friends.
Okay. Prosacek does?
In South Jersey. Yes,
yes, that is correct. In fact, for a while, he worked for one of the casinos in Atlantic City.
Bizarre. Oh, did he? I didn't know that.
He was with the Eagles after the Giants for a short time, and that's why he's based in South Jersey.
Right.
But the statement I wanted to make, that you don't really hear on any network or anything about the Giants, I don't know if you guys ever thought about it, but if you think about it, the Giants are the only team in the NFL. You may can look it up. I'm almost certain of this. They're the only team that won a championship in the last four decades.
Let's think about this.
In the last four, they won in.
All right, 11-7. Okay, so that's that takes care of this part. Then you go back 1990, and you go 86.
They won in 2007.
Hadn't thought about
and they
that.
They won in 2011.
Yeah, hadn't thought about that.
There you go.
I don't know if they're the only one, but that is true. They have won in each of the last four decades. That is true.
And I believe they're the only team that's done that. And the thing I'm saying is, it's not easy to win championships.
No,
you look at the last
not.
20 years.
No, it's not.
You can almost name in the two hands how many teams have won those championships.
Well, I think one of the things that I really appreciate is when I look at the Patriots and I see how they have become such a dynasty in this era of football, when the entire league is basically set up to have you fail. You're not supposed to have a team that's good year after year after year based on the way the NFL is now set up. They are trying to chip away at you every chance they get. You're a good team? Guess what? We're going to knock your legs out. That's the way the league is set up.
Right. I lived in New England for 27 years, and watching them, I've seen them in their bad times with the Grogan, even though Grogan was pretty good, in their bad years. But what Belichick has done, even though he lucked out with the injury to Bledsoe, what he has done is now the teams believe. And what they do there is they use their guys when they evaluate people. They put them in position to do what they do best. They don't try to take a square and put it into a circle. Whatever these guys can do, they'll try to take advantage of what they do best and put them in that position to do only what they can do. That's where the whole term from do your job came from, because they're only using guys for what they can do well.
You're right.
If you look at them, they don't have no big-name guys on their team.
The other thing they do real well, my friend?
From other teams.
Marvin, the other thing they do really, 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 really well, they get rid of guys a year too early rather than a year too late. So they constantly
exactly
refresh.
Yes.
It's easier to do that, though. I think both Paul and Marvin, I think you guys would agree. It's easier to do that, to trade a guy. And that's in all sports. They say better to trade a guy a year too early than a year too late. But when you are having continued success.
It feeds itself.
It's easy.
No doubt.
Well,
the main ingredients is Brady. Yeah, as long as they keep Brady.
Amen to that.
They keep the core. They can get rid of big price guys coming up, which they already have somebody in place to replace them anyway. And they take advantage of teams. The teams like Cleveland, the teams like when the Raiders was playing back. Mm-hmm. You get Randy Moss for a bunch of flat footballs. I couldn't understand how the Raiders gave him up that easily.
I know.
The Patriots of all teams.
Yeah.
It's like when the Spurs had Tim Duncan. You know? I mean, as long as he was there, you knew they were going to be in it.
For sure on that. Marv, as always, thank you very much for the call, my friend.
Yeah, nice talking to you guys.
Thank
all right,
you,
buddy. If we don't speak to you, happy Thanksgiving. You take care.
You too.
All right, buddy.
Yeah.
Thank you. 201-939-4513 is the number. Let's go to, what do you say we go to Chris in Syracuse. Chris, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. What's going on?
Russ, are you wearing a camouflage cardigan?
You know what? I guess my wife picked it. I guess you would call it camouflage. Let's call it military week. Okay, buddy?
That's awesome. Okay. I just wanted to make sure. So anyways, I had a couple of comments that I would be willing to take off the air. First of all, I support the Marist position back in Ben McAdoo as much as I want to see him gone. And you know, at the risk of starting a controversy with a colloquialism, I'll say that you don't want the inmates running the asylum. I don't think that the mayor has had any choice but to double down right now, because if any of the anonymous reports coming out of the locker room are true and the players are making this push, say for argument's sake that that is true, they really don't have any choice but to back McAdoo at this point, because once you open that door and you start letting the players dictate things like that, that's a bad, bad move for the organization.
Chris, God bless you for saying that. I mean, because that's my whole point of this. You know, it's not a question of somebody, you know, as a fan, I'm thrilled that you would say that. But again, the easy way out, let's just whack somebody for the sake of whacking. But you have to ascertain where the problem lies. Is it just one place or is it several places? And I guarantee you, Chris, did you watch the game last week?
Unfortunately.
Okay. I could see if there was a caption over John Mara's head in the suite as he's watching, pacing back and forth, the caption would have said, whoa. Where do I start? So, and at that juncture, he's got to say to himself, this is not just a one-move thing. I mean, we got to look at the entire thing is what they're going to do.
Yeah, for sure. Real quick, a couple other points I'll make. I would take them off the air. I would support if there was, and I don't know who's coming out in free agency, and credit where it's due. Flowers has done much better, but it's either Deal or O'Hara, who has said that he thinks that Flowers would be better suited for the right. So it's not just an uneducated fan opinion saying that. I know that I've heard – I think it was Deal that has said that. I would pay high money for an Andrew Whitworth-esque player. I know that was last year. But before we gave John Jerry 3 years, $10 million, I would have taken a serious look at that.
And that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. But before you say anything else, I don't think there's any question. Even if you go back to pre-draft – I had always thought that Flowers would be a better right tackle than a left tackle. But the problem is the Giants needed somebody more desperately at left tackle, and he was the best guy on the roster to throw over there. And quite frankly,
too bad Beattie went down.
I get you. But that's the reality. They had no choice. Yep. Beattie gets hurt in March. He tears his pec. They had no choice. And to this point, now here's where you can be critical if you wish. Have the Giants been able to somehow, some way, bring in a better left tackle than Eric Flowers? The answer is no. Now, the cupboard has been bare. They haven't really had the opportunity to go shopping for one. But if you want to say they could have gotten creative somehow to get one, you can certainly make that argument. But the bottom line is, right now, Eric Flowers is the best left tackle on this roster, and even though he would probably be better at right tackle or at guard, he is the best they have at that position. And there is a chance he will be the best they have at that position next year, too. Unless, fingers crossed, the Giants, in trying to upgrade this offensive line, find out during the offseason that many more guys become available that will allow them to start moving pieces around to find the best possible combination.
I'm hopeful that whoever the GM is next year will make a run at Josh McDaniels, and then maybe we'll be able to do some more of the scheming that Marvin was talking about and go that route. Have a great day, guys. Thank you, sir.
All right, Chris. Thank you. Thank you for the call. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Joe in PA. Joe, how are we doing today?
Hey, great. Great to talk to the two wise men there. A lot of knowledge.
Well, I think our wives might differ with you on that, but go ahead.
Don't throw that term around too loosely.
Yeah, go ahead there, Joe. What do you got for us today?
You were talking earlier about disappointing seasons. I know after the Super Bowl, I think it was 86, we had the strike here. That had to be very disappointing because I had high hopes of
extenuating circumstances, though.
But you're right. Yeah.
And even right, to some degree, the 1991 season, because Ray Handley took over for Bill, and we all thought that team was going to make another run.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been a few of those kinds of years, no question.
Okay, now looking at this year, like I said, everybody, lots of people want to get rid of McAdoo and that. I don't understand that either. I think he's making the right move to hold on there with him. But I can't understand the defense because Spag's been there. He didn't forget how to coach. He had us to a Super Bowl. Spagnuolo, the defensive corner. He had us there. The defense has been really upsetting, you know, giving up a lot of points the last few weeks. I know last week it seemed like the cornerbacks were getting beat a lot, and then the previous week the safeties. I don't know if they're all trying to do too much or what's going on there, but I really have to shake my head. What's going on with the defense?
Joe, I think that is the killer for everybody. I mean, you can be upset about this, that, and listen, at 1-8, there's a whole lot of things, you know, you can spread it around, but the defense, it's a mystery.
Right.
How has, you know, to be frank with you, you can ask this question. Was the defense overachieving? I'm just throwing it out there. Was the defense, who was so sound and terrific last year, was it overachieving last year? Is this the real thing? Or is it vice versa? I don't think they were overachieving. I think something happened this year.
We had too many Pro Bowl players there and that stuff like that, veteran players in that defense. I know we're hurt a lot at the linebackers. So, I mean, next year and that, whoever comes in here, if I'm drafting, you know what I mean? The only one I'm taking, if we're up there that high, we have to take another quarterback just in case, because you're up that high. If you could get one just in case, you know, the guy here we have behind Eli now don't come through, I would take him. But I'm really concerned about the defense there, really, you know. And then draft guys on the offensive and defensive line, but – you know, the specialty team's been disappointing with some of the punting and missing some of the field goals, you know, and it's just been a big domino theory there, everybody, you know. I could see the offense having some troubles losing some of your key weapons there and having trouble on the offensive line, but the defense, that really has me wondering what's going on. Like I said, Spags is been there. They have veteran defensive players. You know, it's just whatever. I don't know what the answer is. So thanks for taking my call. Bye.
All right, Joe. Joe nailed it. That's what has everybody perplexed.
You know, I think in the NFL, Russ, and I don't know if this is necessarily true in other sports, but in the NFL, the way I look at a defensive coordinator and how I equate his value, if he's got a bad unit, a substandard unit, and he can get them to be competitive, he gets a big thumbs up from me. If he's got a really good unit and they play really, really well, well, you could always say he was expected to because he had a lot of talent. But where you really identify the, quote, bad apples and the coaches who can't get it done is when they have a terrific unit and they significantly underachieve. Now, this particular defense has been so badly battered and banged up and unfortunately been victimized. What I happen to agree with Jerry Reese, I'm going to tell you this, folks, flat out. I know you don't want to hear it because a lot of people are criticizing the GM, but I think he was right. I think a lot of these defensive players thought they could just hit a switch and they'd be as good as they were last year. And there's one thing about defense. Defense requires even more motion and mental effort than offense does, because you got to have a mindset to dictate what you're going to do to stop that other team. And the Giants defense, okay, they got too many guys who were resting on their laurels. And once that started to snowball, and then the physicality and the injuries started to continue the snowball, it all went downhill to the point where there's nothing Spags can do now. There's nothing he can do.
Yeah.
So I don't want to hear any criticisms of him, because we saw what he did with this defense in 15 to make him competitive. We saw what he did with this defense in 16 to put him number one in the NFC. I'm not going to erase those 2 years of outstanding coaching by him and you know, taint him with what's happening now. I'm not going to do it.
The other situation with that, and I agree with you, you know, about them, you know, maybe too many of them rested on their laurels, you know, from last year. But here's the other thing, and it just doesn't happen in this sport. It's like, because you think you're good, and okay, we're 0-1, and I know we're 0-2. Well, this is just going to correct ourselves because it's too good. Because we are too good. It doesn't correct itself by itself. You have to make the corrections. And I agree with Paul. I think whatever the case, there's just not the getty up. There's just not enough getty up in their gait when they come out. And we were talking last week, I think it was you and I, Paul, mm-hmm. that, you know, so a caller called up and asked, well, if some group or what's going to motivate this team? And I think we said this quite frankly when they were 1-6 and now they're 1-8. To me, it would be the defense. You know, defense is, yeah, if somebody's going to punch you in the mouth and go ahead, make it happen. Well, that certainly hasn't happened the last 2 weeks.
No.
And that's got everybody perplexed. 201-939-4513 is the number. Let's go to Mike in North Bergen. Mike, how are we doing today?
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen? How you doing today?
Hi. What's up, Mikey?
Hey, check this out. I got a dream scenario for you guys, and I just want your opinion on it. What if next year we go in, we got Sean Payton as the head coach, we got Baker Mayfield, we draft him out of Oklahoma, and then we get Pepper Johnson as our defensive coordinator. What do you think about that, Paulie?
First of all, those spots aren't open yet. And until those spots...
That's why I said, what if? I want your opinion on
okay,
that was to happen.
I deal with facts, and so I'm going to respectfully pass on that. However, this is what I will say. I do know Sean Payton from his time here. I do know Pepper Johnson, obviously, from his time here. I have great respect for those gentlemen. Their football knowledge, their devotion to the game. Certainly, Sean Payton has a solid resume. Pepper Johnson did a lot of good things on Belichick's staff with the Patriots. And, of course, the Giants organization thinks very well of him. So if you're asking me, do I think well of those guys? I do. But that's as far as I'm going to go.
And, Mike, you know what? Listen, this is not some radio station. And you certainly are entitled to your opinion, and I know you, and I know you're throwing up a hypothetical situation, but this is a Giants station. It's a Giants show, and you know what? I'm not going to talk about the replacement for
I'm not talking replacements either. He asked me for an opinion of those guys. They're good guys.
We're talking about old Giants. Once a Giant, always a Giant.
You know what I will say?
We could talk about that. And me as a fan, you're absolutely right. I have the right to talk about what I want to talk about.
Sure, sure. I will tell you.
I don't offend anybody.
No.
I'm not trying to put you guys on the spot.
No, I do feel like
it could be a possibility.
I will tell you one thing. Mayfield is not going to be a Giant.
Eli Manning is the
starting quarterback in 2018 unless he gets hurt. And after he is done, Davis Webb is going to be the next franchise quarterback for this team. That I will tell you, and I feel very strongly about that.
TCU the other day, Paul? You look pretty good.
I get you. I'm not saying that Baker Mayfield can't play in the league, but you asked me for the Giants. You asked for an opinion, I'm giving you one.
Thanks, Mikey.
Thank you.
All right, guys.
That's the only thing I was willing to speculate on. But I think it's fair. We both know Sean Payton, and we both know Pepper Johnson. They're good people, and they're good football people.
No one's gonna.
That's fair, right?
I'm not. No one's gonna dispute
that's
that.
Fair.
I just, you know,
that's as far as we're going. Though.
Exactly. That's all I was trying to say to Mike there. You know, you know what hypotheticals are. You know, if
hypotheticals,
if my aunt
don't feed the hungry because they're not real.
Exactly. Let's go to Scott in D.C. Scotty, how are we doing today?
Great, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Yes. Hello.
How you doing?
Good. Two things. You know, in my opinion, the play by the team has been embarrassing, pathetic, more recently non-competitive. I do agree with Mr. Mara's statement that they shouldn't be unloading the coach in mid-season. I like that. It's level-headed. I personally, though, do not want Mr. Reese or Mr. McAdoo to be part of the rebuilding of this team.
Okay.
I think Mr. Reese has had a number of years, 5-6 years, they've put up lousy football, 9-7, 7-9, 6-10, 6-10.
11-5.
Last year they put up 1.9 touchdowns a game. That's not even 2 touchdowns a game. The offensive woes this year, that was with Odell Beckham on the field all last year. The offensive woes this year are not new. This team needed to be rebuilt ever since 2011, and it hasn't happened. So my opinion is that other people need to be in charge of rebuilding this team. The second thing I wanted to mention is, you know, the preseason predictions. Mr. Salzberg, I have you quoted as saying everyone thought they'd win the NFC East. Your sources, New York Post, New York Daily News, Mr. DiTino, you predicted offense would average 28 points a game, and at first you said the defense would average 14 points a game, but then you upped it to 16. Mr. Schmelk said 10-6, they win the division. None of those preseason predictions. That's the team. That's people being paid by the team making those predictions.
Vegas had the Giants over-under, and I just looked it up last week to confirm it. Vegas had them at 9.5 wins was their over-under.
Okay. I called the show and said after they start 3-10, it'll be time to see Davis Webb play.
Well, that's great. You know what? Because that means you probably can go to the deli today and get a winning lottery ticket before they draw the numbers. Good for you. Okay. You're going to be rich.
All right. You know, that's fine. I guess the sarcasm is, how about this? Carl Banks said, quote, on October 11, this team can't stop anyone. How about criticizing him and being sarcastic to him? Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
All right, Scott. You have a good day, too.
Carl and I watch the games together. We know what we said, and we know what we see.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you don't have to tell me about preseason predictions. I don't think anybody was going out on a limb saying, I'm not apologizing for picking the Giants to win the NFC East. And you know what? My bad. How about that? the reason I've taken certain people to task over predictions is because the same people. So let's Mr. Scott in D.C. with the sarcasm, let's circle back. The reason I've taken some people to task over their predictions, since you mentioned the news and since you mentioned the Post, is the following reason. They picked the Giants to win a Super Bowl, okay? They picked the Giants to beat Tom Brady and the Patriots to win a Super Bowl. So that's them making the prediction, and those are the same people calling for McAdoo and Reese's neck. So they're assessing the same way. I'm not calling for somebody's neck. So to me, that's hypocrisy. That's what I don't like. But thank you very much, and I hope you do what Paul said. Go to the deli, get yourself a lottery ticket, hit the jackpot, and have a good day. In the meantime, that is a wrap on Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. For Paul DiTino, I am Russ Salzberg, and we will see you next time.
You're tuned in to listen to Big Blue Kickoff live on Giants.com. The show will begin shortly.